Welcome back to The Brandon White Show, where we have conversations worth listening to give you an edge to win in your business and your life. I'm your host, Brandon White. Here we go. Thomas, welcome back, man. This is our third show. We started with Venture Clothing. We then went to Tommy Tsunami Surf School, which you still have with your brother, Peter. And now you're doing Midday, which is a superfood tea for afternoon jolt. So welcome back, man.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me back. It's like I need a little medal for coming three times.
Three times? I don't think I've had anybody on three times. Maybe one or two people, but nobody's been on three times. But you're always doing some interesting stuff, and I've been really watching your whole journey. You started Midday last year?
Yeah. Yeah, we launched pre-orders in fall of 2023, but the idea kind of started in January 2023.
So you're going to walk us through the whole thing today from soup to nuts, so somebody who's listening will be able to understand like concept to this product, which is right here with us today. And for listeners, this is going to be a rare opportunity because Thomas is not scared to tell you everything of what he did. And it's going to be pretty interesting because you actually really faked it. But I mean, you completely faked the product to get an email list to start, which we'll talk about. But let's roll back a little bit. What made you go into the tea market, basically the supplement market?
Yeah. So like I was saying, basically, we've always had a desire, my brother and I, to start a physical product, direct consumer business. We have a surf school right now, which is a local service-based business. And there's pros and cons with that. One of the cons is just the scalability of it. So that's why we were always attracted to starting a physical product business. Two, I've had, as you know, the previous business that we talked about a couple episodes ago, I think the first time I was on,
yep,
was a clothing brand. So that's where I got my feet wet in creating a product, manufacturing overseas, figuring out, you know, distribution, marketing, all that stuff. So we knew we wanted to start a physical product business. From Venture, I learned a couple things that would end up us landing on the tea. And what those are is, one, we wanted a product that was light to ship. We wanted a product that only had one SKU. Versus clothing, you know, you have tons of SKUs, colors, and sizes. And the issue we ran into is you buy an order of clothing, you don't sell the extra small and the double XL in this color, and that is your margin. So we just lost money. So that was another thing we learned. And we also wanted a product that was consumable and replenishable, which would help AOV and LTV, which is average order value and lifetime value, which are basically just kind of metrics to makes life easier as a business owner, for sure. The product has that somewhat baked in. So that is from like a business standpoint, why the tea was attractive. And then honestly, too, just from like a need that my brother and I wanted, we're both sensitive to caffeine, specifically coffee caffeine. So I can drink coffee in the AM. So like even if I sometimes drink it like 10 AM, I'm like a little too wired in the afternoon. So And my brother's the same way. So basically, we were looking for an alternative for something to give us energy in the afternoon to help us, whether it's we're doing business or we want to go surf or whatnot, that was gave us energy, didn't give us that kind of crash, too much caffeine that the coffee caffeine does, and kind of fits into just us being healthy and, you know, surfers and active people. So that's why we landed on the idea of Midday Tea.
With a clothing company, because you did ramp that up, you had a lot of SKUs, you had some really good products. Did you not think that you could pivot, or not pivot, that's not a good word, but learn from those mistakes and not buy the extra small and the XXL and just live with the fact that those people are going to complain, which is ultimately what they do? Because I, as you know, I had a fishing clothing company. It was the same thing. And the big people would tell me, oh, if you make extra, extra large, we don't buy one, we'll buy 15. Well, that's easy to say until you have to pull out the credit card and then they don't do it. And like you said, basically you're making these really good margins on a per unit basis, but then the inventory in your parents' garage, no pun intended, right? That's where mine was. It's where probably yours is too, is left. And there sits your margin that you can't get rid of, that you're basically going to give away to Goodwill or something. I mean, that's what we ultimately wound up doing, or donating it to somewhere,
yeah,
because it's already sized. So did you not think you could make a move and do that? Or
yeah, that's a good question, because that kind of makes me just like think about the past. I think now, yes, like 100%. I've even thought to myself, like, oh, if I were to like redo venture, how would I do it? I would just sell just underwear and position it in a certain way versus trying to do like a full-fledged clothing brand. In the moment, why I shut it down, I think I kind of just looked at the P&L and I was like, this is just bleeding money and Surf School is making money. So it's kind of like unemotional business decision. Yeah, I go back and forth like, oh, like, you know, stick around. And like you said, kind of like repivot, hone in on the focus and just the messaging and kind of like how my product fits into the marketplace a little more. Yeah, just a little more dialed versus kind of doing the spray and pray strategy. But, you know, sometimes you just make decisions and.
Well, you do get burned out sometimes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've been in it or you're in something so long and you're putting so much. For anybody who's listening, to go from zero to like 0.5 is hard. Just to even get a product,
yeah,
like at your house,
yeah,
a sample, right?
Yeah.
A sample.
That definitely gives me memories of like starting the career when I was in Santa Barbara. I was going to school down there at the City College, did a program and basically an entrepreneurship class where in a semester you had to like launch a business. And that's how the underwear came about. And that like when from, like you said, from having the idea to like getting the first sample and the first order to the United States, I was like, I'm done. And like, really, like the business hadn't even started.
No, right. You haven't even, yeah. You haven't even sold a unit.
Exactly. So yeah, I think, and we'll talk about it, this process of going through certain steps to streamline that, to reduce your risk, to save money. There's definitely a strategy to launch a product. And I had like learned some of those lessons through the previous businesses. And I would argue it even kind of works in this service-based industry as well, where you can kind of like cement your idea, your positioning, your messaging, and how your product or service fits into the market before doing that big capital investment in the inventory and all that stuff. So yeah, these are kind of just lessons you learn as an entrepreneur, right? That's like just part of the game.
Do you think that some of those could actually, and you know, you and I have worked on financials and stuff together for your businesses, that you learn that if we had seen that, you would have modeled that into your model, meaning I am not going to sell 30% of my product.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen? And I, even in that fishing clothing company, thinking back, Thomas, I didn't do that. And you probably didn't do it either.
Yeah.
100%. And that's what alters your sort of the trajectory of you take. And I don't think people do the financials. And you know, I harp on this, like you got to write the business plan. We know you got to write the business plan, but if you don't do the financials are what would tell us what would happen if we don't sell 30% of the product, but we're so optimistic that we don't want to consider that. Right.
Yeah. That's like you said about just being optimistic. I feel like as entrepreneurs, we can convince ourselves of ideas, even though aren't necessarily good ideas to go after. So that's something I've kind of like harnessed over the last couple of years, is instead of like doing all sorts of ideas, having a little more conservative approach and just like looking at things a little more, I don't want to say negatively, but just like realistically. And then that's where the financials come in, because like numbers don't lie. And then even the original financial forecast you do build, you're probably still being optimistic, because things are just harder and shit happens. So yeah, I think just having basically a sober conversation of like what you're going after, and then also building out those models like really does help, because you, like I said, just numbers don't lie. And then if you can look at it and then either plan for it, pivot, or et cetera, et cetera.
I was thinking about that before you came over today for this recording, because we've talked about using that, the underwear design for this entrepreneur class that mm-hmm. I teach high school kids. Because I think it's important for high school kids to have an education, very much like you did. There's a lot of actually Half Moon Bay kids there's probably a lot of kids all over the country who would like to start a business and don't really have any infrastructure to do that. But I was telling my wife over lunch today, I was like thinking, wow, if you sell, let's say you sell underwear, we can say midday, but we'll get to midday in a second. In any of these products, sell a pair of underwear, you sell it for $20. I'm making it up. I forget. Is that what you sold yours? Do you remember? 15 yeah. bucks piece.
No, it was like 20 or I think 25.
Okay. 20, 24. 20. Let's just say 20 for round number. To sell 1,000 units, you make $20,000. You probably profit 10,000. 1,000 units is a lot of people. Like imagine 1,000 people coming over to your house.
Yeah.
And you have to reach those people. So you really have to think about that. But I think that going back to your thing about being optimistic, the irony of being an entrepreneur is you actually have to be over optimistic because you're basically making something from nothing. So you have to be realistic and, in your words, sober while not being sober because you could talk yourself out of it.
Yeah. And I think too, another, it's a balance, right? Of like just polar opposites is arguably if you knew everything about the industry, you might not go into it in the first place. So yeah, I think it's just like understanding that to be an entrepreneur, that just is part of the game and taking it to the chin, so to speak, and just being comfortable with that, whether it's losing money, making mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. And then when it happens, not be like, oh my God, this happened. You're like, no shit. Like this was,
it's going to happen.
Yeah, like, oh, I fell surfing. Like it just happens or whatever, right. Or, you know, insert whatever career, sport, thing in life. And you know, it's just, it is the natural thing to happen. So I think that is, maybe a little mindset shift that could help certain younger entrepreneurs or to kind of, yeah, just like preface it that like it will happen. And then if you, as long as you like go into that knowing that, and then you're like somewhat prepared mentally, that can be a little more helpful.
No, I think that's a good analogy. I mean, you're a surfer, so we always use these surfing analogies, but you are going to wipe out. Mm-hmm. You are not, even the best surfers don't ride every wave.
Exactly.
I mean, you see the picture of the wave they rode, but for the most part, they don't record all the wipeouts. I mean, maybe in the reels at the end of the season, they do that, but you got to wipe out a lot to do that. And I think the other thing I wrote about this recent or a few months ago is you just have to expect that you're going to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you're not going to make mistakes and you're not going to strike out. It's that you actually have the confidence that you're going to figure it out when you get to that point, right?
Yeah.
And keep going. So let's jump into Midday. Midday, you have this idea. You had done venture. You have a great services business. There's a cap on that, which for listeners who might not know, it's not necessarily a cap that you couldn't expand, but when I want to summarize in it, there's only so many licenses on the coast that you're only allowed to have so many kids. In your case, well, I mean, you do teach lessons to adults, but your camp is really mm-hmm. the crux of it. So it's limited on what you're going to do in Half Moon Bay. It's not because you can't grow the business. It's because legally there's very hard to get more permits effectively, right?
Yeah.
So that has its own cap. And then that brings us to Midday. So you come up with the idea, you're sensitive to caffeine, which I can understand. And then you come up with this idea that you're going to do this Midday jolt. How did you, like, where did you start? Because it's a really interesting story. It's interesting. What's interesting about it is you actually executed on how you're supposed to do it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. So I think I brought my little note, notes of list here. So kind of break it into five phases, basically. As you mentioned, we had like the high level idea of this product is solving a problem that we have, and we have a theory that others may have that, and then we can create a product to solve that and, you know, sell the product. And that was basically, there's other people that are sensitive to caffeine. They need energy at 2 p.m. or midday, you know, after they eat or whatever. How can we create an alternative to either stop them from having that second cup of coffee, or what we're learning now is maybe cutting out the afternoon soda that people have, or that candy bar, Snicker bar, whatever, you know, whatever people's kind of crutches for the afternoon, and then introduce healthy alternative. So that was the high level thesis. And basically, we kind of broke it in five phases, and this is something I learned too, like going through venture as well. I just like kind of you do it once and you learn from that, and you know, obviously you do it a couple more times and it gets better. So I guess to dive right into it, basically the first phase was we have this idea. What we need to do is basically define our like ideal persona and the messaging and basically the product market fit for that persona. So to like ramble about that, let's call it phase one. One of the mistakes I made with venture, I was kind of throwing paint at the wall versus having a very specific target market or segment to go after with a very specific message to fit their problem. Because as you know, a startup, you have limited capital, finite resources, time, team, whatever. So you have to use your resources like very effectively. So you just can't have a super wide vanilla message because you just don't have the ad dollars to like resonate. So yeah, we basically, through the exercise, you know, you basically pick one person and you go through an exercise of choosing everything from their name, their age, their occupation, where do they live, what TV shows do they like, what are their hobbies, what are their interests, and really basically narrow it down to one single person. And then from there, you can kind of start to piece together your messaging on how that would communicate to that person. So yeah, high level, that's what we did for phase one.
Well, who is your target market for Midday right now?
Yeah, so we're still learning that. And that's a little caveat. It's like, although there's a balance, right? As an entrepreneur, you don't want to be overly fixated on certain things. You want to get as close as possible. And then if you can, kind of keep it moving through the phases, because, and back to how we're talking about like financials, like you'll get it somewhat close, but you'll still be off. So this applies to basically all the phases that we'll talk about. And you'll see in phase three and four that you kind of, there's a way to test your hypothesis, so to speak. But what we initially came up with was basically 40 to 50 year old female in the Midwest, which is like totally different than who we are. My brother and I were late 20s surfers in California. But yeah, so that was our initial thesis, basically. And then...
Well, just out of curiosity, why?
Yeah, I guess...
Or how?
Yeah, so I guess rolling into phase two. So once you like have an idea of what that persona is, you need to like do research and understand that market. So that would be some like very tactical things. It's basically looking at Facebook ad library, looking at competitors, seeing what ads they're running, and who is the person in the ad? What are the messaging? How is that? How long has the ad been running? Is it successful or not? You know, as you know, if it's been running for a while, you can tell that it's working. So yeah, basically looking at other competitors or just brands that are like similar to your hypothesis, and then basically looking at how they're messaging their products and the words they use and just like people they use in the ads. And then that can kind of help you build on top of that to put kind of phase one and phase two together.
I know. I want to go back for a second. Like, we're on the California coast. You and your brother surf. You run surfing. You've lived here your whole life. I mean, you're a California surfer at the heart of it, right? I mean, you're a businessman who lives on the coast who surfs. How do you pick Midwest women? Were you like hanging out throwing darts one night and you're like, hey, let's do this?
I think it was just more of like, oh, this is like more of a mass market that we can kind of tap into. We don't want to have a product that's like niche for basically like someone who was us. So we were thinking like, oh, like how could we basically like, it was a bigger TAM, total addressable market. That was one thing I'm thinking. And
are these moms?
Yeah.
So these are moms. Let's put this together a little bit more. These are moms who have kids who basically are run ragged, because I can't imagine being like doing that full time. And in the afternoon need a boost, who value natural things, who might be aspirational because the California surfing idea has a halo effect.
Spot on. And one thing actually, so this will kind of tie together why we envision this market is through our surf school, we get a lot of those people to our surf school and they kind of see what you just said, like California surfer lifestyle, and it's authentic to us. So my brother and I are like, oh, how can we basically like tell our story and share it? And that has, even though we were not like selling Midday to our Tommy Shinomi customers, we just, you know, talk to our customers and tell them about the business. We grew up here, et cetera, et cetera. And that story resonates with that group. So that was definitely one thing that was like a little kind of a tip that we're like, oh, maybe there's something in here that we can tell our story and then that will resonate with this audience with a different product, if that makes sense.
It does. I'm interested why you thought in the hypothesis that these women, mostly moms, right, would want to see another, would want to, or maybe you didn't think about this or did you, would see a male person in the ad. Most women's products in general have other women. So I could see, like, I don't know who, maybe that's bad that I don't know, like a woman surfer who's well known or something, has mm-hmm. the California lifestyle, right? Were you and your brother Peter thinking that you would be the people that you said you would tell your story? So you were just thinking that that would work?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I think, like, to start, we definitely, like, some of the advertising we do is like we share our story and it's like a video of myself or my brother. But we also do use like creators that are like fit our target market, so to speak. So we do a little bit of both.
Got you. I didn't see those ads, but yeah. I just wanted to unpack it for somebody listening because it's at first glance doesn't make sense, but it does make sense when you were seeing these parents, moms drop off their kids who, for people who are listening, we live in Half Moon Bay, which I don't know is the best way to say is a really rural. It's a California coast, but it's rural here.
Small,
I mean,
town for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's horses riding to the Mexican restaurant, literally, right? Tied up out front. Meanwhile, 7 minutes over the hill is Palo Alto, everything Silicon Valley that you would ever imagine. And people for your Tommy Tsunami Surf School come from over the hill, which is more urban, I guess would be the way to say it. So you were seeing these people and then you just extrapolated that and said, well, this population also exists in the Midwest.
Correct. And we did see...
I'm asking while I'm putting this all together.
Yeah, no, 100%. And like, too, just we have a big customer base from surf camp moms. And that was, even though they're not from the Midwest, but they, like you said, there is some correlation there.
Right.
You know, they have kids, they're busy, they get tired.
This episode is sponsored by the Halle Financial Team at Expert Lending. Buying a house in today's market is competitive, and you need a lender that can close fast and get you the very best rate. The team is licensed in 48 states and has over 20 years' experience in the real estate and lending space, and access to lending rates that most mortgage brokers can't get. I know, because I'm an investor in the team. If you need a mortgage or know someone that does, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086 and talk to a real human who will give you the customer service you deserve. Again, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086. Now back to the show. Well, it makes sense though, because the Midwest that you guys picked would have, I mean, everywhere, I don't say everyone. I grew up on the East Coast originally. There's always a halo effect to California. Mm-hmm. Right. It has a halo effect. I mean, it just, it has.
California does sell too. Like, right? Yeah, we're a business podcast. We're here to like sell stuff. So like, it doesn't hurt to like have that. And the thing is too, it's authentic to us. So
yes.
Like, we should just like, this is us. This is like why we're doing it. It's not like we're just like selling something that's like not us. So yeah. So
well, I appreciate you unpacking that. I didn't mean to beat that horse, but for someone listening, just thinking that process of how you got there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think too, like it might go full circle once we kind of go into phase three and four of how we, you know, in phase one and two, you basically like I said, define your persona. And then
what's the difference between one and two specifically?
Phase one, you're basically writing out your ideal persona and then, you know, and your minimum viable segment of the customer. And then you do an exercise where you dial it down to one single person. And then phase two is, okay, now that I have this person, let me look at similar brands and understand how they're being marketed to, which will help us in phase three.
Was that the tea product or was it supplements in general?
Just supplements and even like clothing brands, entertainment,
anything.
Yeah, cross-reference that kind of hits your ideal demo.
Got you. So we got phase one. Phase one, define. Eventually get it down to one person with very specific attributes, even give that person a name. In this case, it's basically a 40 to 50 year old female, most likely a mom, who's trying to take care of herself while she's trying to keep the family basically up and going. And then in phase two, you are doing the research. Now that you have that, what other brands are targeting this segment of that market? And that brings us to phase three.
Correct. And then I guess one other point just to add to the phase one and two, and there's an example like to kind of basically bring it home. If you were to, there, I think there's through this, like, and actually I could totally, we could totally link this in the show notes. I do have Google Docs of phase one, phase two, and worksheets.
Oh, that'd
that
be
people
cool.
Could do. But in the worksheet, they basically give an example where it's like, you want to sell sunscreen, and there's like the bad example, like, I am going to sell sunscreen to like people on this earth. That's like not segmented at all. Versus like, oh, I'm going to sell sunscreen to someone who bikes in Northern California. And, you know, I'm using that because I know you bike, or so there might, and then through that process, there might be certain features, benefits, things that that target market cares about that can help define how you build your product. So yeah, that's one thing I wanted to basically add in before we jumped into phase three.
I think that's important. So now we're in phase three.
Correct. So now this is when phase one and two is like theory. Phase three and four is where you test that theory. So phase three, basically what you want to do is you get photorealistic 3D renderings of your product.
Where do you get that?
You can just use like freelancers on Fiverr or Upwork.
Who will draw a concept.
Correct. So whether it's like, yeah, any type of product, really, any type of physical product, it can be done. Especially these days with like AI and stuff, it's like game over.
It is. I tried a new app last night. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So it's really easy and it's cheap. You know, you can do it for a couple $100 to get a couple images. And then once you have those images, you want to build a simple landing page that kind of follow best practices, which is headline, subheading, call to action, left, right content with a benefit one, benefit two, benefit three, then another headline, subheadline, call to action. And this is where you leverage the work you did in phase one and two with your messaging to be, what is that messaging? And what we landed on with Midday is like superfood tea designed to beat the 2 p.m. slump, the afternoon slump. So we're really talking to that problem of the afternoon slump. And we could go like, one argument could be, you know, define it even further. So like, you know, calling out your target market. But nonetheless, yeah, you basically want to build a landing page, get your images, throw them up, and then have a call to action with some type of offer and with an email input. And then the last thing is you build a simple, maybe 5 to 7 automated emails that when people do sign up and kind of raise their hand and say, hey, I'm interested in this, it puts them on a little flow to educate them more about the product.
Follow-up sequence.
Correct. So yeah, that's basically phase three, where you're putting everything into practice and like building out a simple little flow.
What did you use to build your landing page? For someone who's just listening, yeah. Like, okay, Thomas, that's really cool, but I have no idea how to do that.
Yeah. So I think we kind of knew we were, what did we use? We use Shopify as the website, which is the go-to website for physical products. And then we added a plugin to make it a little more, just build like more advanced landing pages. I'll have to double check what it's called.
That's okay. Yeah. But you can use something like Shopify, or the truth is you can hire someone on Fiverr to stand up a WordPress site and make you a one. If I remember your original landing page, because I landed on it because you advertised it or something. And I was like, how's he have that product already? And then I sent you a text and you're like, I don't have the product. I'm just testing it.
Yeah. Yeah. What did we use? I'll have to go look back.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll put it in the show notes. It'll be in the show notes for listeners. But that's not really hard anymore.
Yeah.
It's not hard to get a landing page.
Yeah.
You could hire someone on Fiverr probably for $100.
Yeah, exactly. And that's basically the punchline is, we do this because it's a lot cheaper than having a theory and then just sending it, investing a bunch of money in inventory, and then be like, oh, wait, there isn't this demand that we think. So the goal is we have a theory and we need to prove that. We do it in a capital efficient way to like reduce our risk. And this is one thing I didn't really do as well, the underwear, is I kind of just like went through phase one and I was like, oh, I have this demo, kind of skip phase three and four of like testing that demo. And then ordering the big order. So
now phase one, you've defined your avatar. You have that down to a person and a name. Phase two, you did the research of other brands and really like hacking the ads. Because if you use Facebook?
Ad library.
Ad library. You can see people running ads and you can like reverse engineer effectively, like you said, because if the ad's been running for more than 4 months, it's performing. Mm-hmm. That's fact, yeah. Right? Like, or I don't want to say fact because some people forget and don't believe. If it's a well-known thing, you can bet that the ad is doing well. Phase three, you build a landing page with the formula of basically picture, content to the right, a benefits box is basically, I think, what they call it. I think it's actually called a Brunson box is what they called it after Russell Brunson originally. Mm. Then you're going to have some subheadings and benefits and then call to action, which your call to action is sign up for my email.
Yeah.
Or be alerted or get 10% off if you sign up early.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a couple, depending on how you're going to do it. Some people do Kickstarter. Some people do pre-orders direct on the website versus Kickstarter. You can also do like a ghost funnel. And then this is what we did for a short while is like have people buy the product. And then what I would do is I would just call them up and talk to them and ask them questions and learn like, oh, why'd you buy this? And then be like, oh, like we're out of stock. Well, I'll refund you. But when we do get more stock, I'll put you on our list or whatever. So
I want to say, I think that's one of the best ways because that actually shows that they'll buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And that kind of effortlessly goes into phase four is, so once you have all that tech and the copywriting and your images all set up, then you basically run paid traffic. These days it's Facebook ads because it's such a powerful thing or a machine that can, you know, really, take your idea. And two, one other thing I want to mention is with Facebook these days, like creative is the targeting. You just do broad targeting and then your creative will find your customer. So you can like call out your customer as the hook or have, yeah, certain things that you from phase one and two that you think your demo may kind of grab their attention, so to speak, or call out a problem they may have. And then that will, if your theory is correct, and Facebook will like find the people that are most interested. And what we found out was like through the data of like who's clicking and who's signing up and who's buying was basically that 40 to 60 year old female demo in the Midwest. And like California and like the East Coast and West Coast, they're definitely like more populated states.
Sure.
So you definitely get orders from there too. But high level, it was like clearly obvious it was more of a female dominated as far as just results. Everything from like click-through rate, cost per click, hook rate, hold rate, which are all metrics that you can like look within Facebook to see how your kind of ads performing. And then, so yeah, you basically run paid traffic. And then when you do get signups, what we do is do customer interviews and then basically, you know, call them up or email them and hey, we'll give you a discount if you want to, you know, early bird access or whatnot, some type of benefit for them. And then, yeah, just basically, you know, have a conversation with them and ask questions about why they purchase, you know, what.
Did you have a list? Did you have specific questions? So it was always the same?
Yeah, I did have a list. I don't know. I remember the questions off the top of my head, but high level is basically like, we're just asking about the problem, like why they signed up or why they purchased, kind of like what is their current solution? I'm like, what are they, just talk to me about your afternoon ritual. Like, what do you do? And that's kind of where we learned that people like to drink soda in the afternoons. So if we get someone from like, even if it's a diet soda, it's filled with just like shitty artificial flavoring, that we can get them to this alternative. That's like a win in our books. So through there, that will determine how close you were in your initial like persona. And then also you might learn stuff about like certain ingredients for us, since it was tea, what to put in. Certain features, if it was like a wearable or, you know, it's not a supplement product, and that will help you kind of build your first product that you eventually go and place the order for.
How many interviews did you do?
I think we did 50. Yeah. I think we did 50.
Were they all phone calls?
Yeah.
How long?
I would pitch people. It would be like, oh, just a minute. But like people like to talk. So sometimes 10, 15 minutes. Yeah, sometimes people are just fired up to chat about like, and it's, you know, they're like, oh, this like kid from this like company. How many like online businesses like call customers?
I think that people don't understand that when you talk to the customer, they'll tell you exactly what to build.
Yeah. And that's actually one thing we did learn and we wanted to take from our like service-based surf school is just that like one-to-one combat and like really customer-facing, kind of bringing that into the DTC world, because you know it's easy to just like run Facebook ads and just like never talk to a customer. So that is one thing that we kind of like learned, and not even learned, just it's like if I were to ever do anything else, that's like, you just have to go talk to your customers. You know what I mean? And you just learn so much. So,
so you did 50 calls times 10 minutes, which it was probably longer. So it's 500 minutes. So that's, it's hours. You do this in a short period of time, like months.
And like I said, we had the idea January 2023. We launched pre-orders fall 2023.
Real pre-orders, but you were selling fake orders and some email sign-up all those months.
Correct. And then we were also like running Tommy Tsunami. So
well, right. During it was just super busy for you guys.
Yeah.
How much were you spending on, for somebody listening, on Facebook ads? Just to give an idea, like this, you don't have to spend $10,000 a day or something crazy.
I think total we spent like in 8 months, I think we did spend like around like $8,000.
Yeah, over with, 8 months or 10. Yeah, but that's $1,000 a month. That's not like a day. Some people, the idea is that you have to run a crazy amount of money per day to get this. But just to put it in perspective, you were collecting emails, and I forget how many emails did you tell me you guys collected? A few thousand.
Yeah, thousands. It was like, after like cleaning, I just recently cleaned the list a little bit, who just didn't open it. But I think we got roughly around 3,000 emails.
So 3,000, you spent $8,000. That's $250 for an email, which is actually in today's world still cheap, even for lead magnets. Mm-hmm. Some people spend $7 for an email.
Yeah.
I mean, even 10, depending on what they're targeting. So you're basically getting a very targeted, not very, specifically targeted, interested person for $250 on your customer acquisition initially. You do have to convert them into a paying member, but that's pretty good.
Yeah. And then this also helps you back to like financial forecasting. It gives you a rough idea of like what your acquisition cost will be, at least a little more confidence of like, okay, if I can acquire an email lead for $250, and then you can kind of run some models, and okay, if I, out of 100 emails, 5% turn into customers, and this is like my acquisition cost. And so you can kind of start to piece together basically a rough idea of like how the numbers would work, which all, like I said, go back to like reducing your risk as much as possible and just making sure that you have like a successful business and that like the numbers work and the positioning works and the customers are there and they're willing to pay for your product at a certain price point. Another thing you can do is you can like test pricing before you even have the product. So there's a lot of things you could do, but high level, I think that's basically the mindset and the framework. And to keep in mind, we still haven't ordered a product.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, you haven't even figured out how you're going to make midday.
Correct. So around phase four, once we started getting leads, we started having customer phone calls, that's when we would start the process of figuring out how to make this, because I have no experience in the
supplement industry. What's phase four specifically?
Phase four specifically is running Facebook ads to the landing page that you built in phase three and doing customer interviews.
And you need at least 50. I do some teaching with Steve Blank, who teaches the lean startup process. And his rule, which is really harsh, is 100 people in a week. Mm. That's crazy. 100 people is a lot. I think you get a good idea from 50 if you can get 100. I mean, would you agree? You definitely.
Yeah. I mean, the more the merrier, right? You just get more information, kind of gives you that confidence to know that you're heading in the right direction.
So you guys are in phase four, you're running Facebook ads, you get about 250, I'm just estimating, per good email once you've cleaned that list. You and Peter sit down one day and are like, okay, I think this, like, what made the go, no go?
Yeah, I think seeing people order the product with like no reviews, no social proof, just no track record, you know, just a random thing on the internet. So we're like, okay, it's not going to get worse than that. Like, we'll get more reviews, we'll get more social proof, we'll get more customers. So it's only going to go uphill. You can't like have like negative customers, or I guess you could have negative reviews if you build a shit product.
If you don't have a good product.
Yeah.
But I think you even had some fake reviews. I don't mean fake, but you had no social proof on that homepage?
So what we did do is, there is a service where you can use, I think it's called Brand Featured, and we use it for the surf school as well, where it's kind of like a little hack, but when you don't have any social proof, and especially for a consumable product, like it's just a higher just consumers need more trust in that because they're putting in their bodies. So you can, you basically reach out to this company, I believe it's called Brand Featured, and they, what they'll do is they will post, write a press release or a little press article, post that article onto websites that are either owned or like subcategories of big press companies, so like NBC, CBS, et cetera, et cetera. And then technically through there, like you're allowed to use as seen in through these companies. So that is one little hack. It's relatively cheap to kind of give you some press when, you know, you necessarily weren't like in CBS, but it was like a subcategory, like, oh, CBS of like
affiliate
or a smaller town or like a subsection of that. So that is one little hack to get more press that is definitely helpful because social proof is huge, you know?
It makes a big difference in the lift. I just wanted to ask that. So let's go back or let's go forward. You get this information, you see the email list, you've talked to 50 people, they're give or take some, and you sit down at dinner and you're like, can't get worse, let's do this?
Basically, yeah. Yeah. And that's when we started looking for manufacturers and like really piecing together like, okay, like where's the packaging? How are we going to like formulate this? What's the flavor profile? Where is it going to get mixed? And you know, where is it going to get manufactured? And how are we going to get it to us? So basically all those steps. And that's, you know, where I reached out to you. We had a couple leads and of, you know, one place who could, but the issue, the order quantities, and that's like, if you're starting startup kind of grassroots, that's going to be probably your biggest issue. So if you can find a manufacturer that has low order quantities, that's a huge one because then, you know, you don't have to put as much capital up front to like get that order. But yeah, I basically reached out to you and you had a connection down and I believe you did a podcast.
Yeah,
right?
Doug Smith from True Nutrition.
Correct. So he runs a supplement brand and a manufacturing facility down in San Diego. And then you linked us up. And then from there, really, they were super helpful. That was kind of a game changer where we kind of had a vision of what we wanted the product to be. So we're like, we want caffeine source to be oolong tea, and we want these superfoods in it, ginger, ginseng, maca, ashwagandha, and then and turmeric. So those are the five superfoods in it. And the reason we chose those was we either use those as supplements in our own lives, and the goal of the product was to give you like natural energy, calm focus, and healthy digestion. So oolong tea mixed with those kind of like make a nice blend. But we didn't know like, you know, like how much tea, all the measurements of what makes, you know, how much to go into it. And then I remember Doug, we had a call after we got connected and I was kind of explaining our vision. And he was like, it's got to taste good. Like if it does not taste good, like no one's going to drink it. No one's going to reorder it. So it has to taste good. So, I mean, as far as next steps, we basically got in contact with them. And then I think we pitched them on like, this is roughly the order quantity we want. And the minimum for them was 500. So 500 units. These are the ingredients we want. And then they have an in-house department of where they like do flavor testing. And then they just do it all day long for like powders and all sorts of drinks. So they just like understand, you know, they just know what to do. So yeah, they basically made a little sample of kind of V1 of all the right amounts of each ingredient. You know, certain ingredients are more powerful and like give a more powerful taste. So for example, maca, like if you had like a bunch of maca, it would just like throw the flavor profile off. So little things like that, really, they helped us dial it in. And then I think they sent us a V1. It was like really good, like 90% there. We were like, oh, damn. Like, okay. Like, I thought it was going to be way more difficult. And then I think we went back and forth on the sweetness level. And just for anyone listening, it's in between a sweet tea and an herbal tea as far as like flavor profile. So the caffeine source is from oolong tea. And then they added organic lemon juice powder, which helps with just the flavor. So it's kind of got like a lemony oolong tea flavor profile. And then one thing we're super pumped on that we worked with Doug in San Diego with was instead of putting cane sugar or like artificial sweeteners, they use monk fruit, which is just a little more of a natural sweetener. The evidence shows that it's better for your microbiome. It doesn't spike your insulin. versus some of the, you know, artificial sweeteners like sucralose or just cane sugar. And then going back to original thesis with someone's having a candy bar, a soda, even if it's a diet soda, or like coffee with, you know, a ton of sugar in it. This is a healthy option. It has sub 1 gram of sugar in it. Wow. And that's just from the lemon juice powder and the monk fruit. So we played with that a little bit. We handed out to friends and family in the area. And then, yeah, we got something that we felt was 98% there from our little circle. But realistically, like we needed, I'm totally spacing. They did a randomized taste test.
Did they really?
Yeah.
For you?
Yeah. That was huge. Like, no, Doug was super helpful from the whole
way. I feel
way
like
through.
We're talking like a drug dealer, like Doug from San Diego that I text you and you're like, yeah, Doug from San Diego is going to hook you up. But Doug from San Diego is actually,
he's been around a long time.
He is the manufacturer he has True Nutrition, which I use,
Isn't that like 8-figure business or something?
No, it's big.
Yeah.
And he's got customized protein powder. You can customize it on his website. And I don't like whey protein. It doesn't sit well with me. So he actually has grass-fed beef protein powder with, you can mix your stuff. And it was just like, I've been using it for years. And I mean, full disclosure, he sponsors me because I ride my bike a lot. I'm not a pro or anything, but I do ride.
But he makes great products.
Yeah, I know. He makes epic products.
You know,
in the U.S.
Correct. In San Diego.
In San Diego. You told me this, and it's solar power, apparently, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is like he's legit. So I'm sitting here laughing because you're like, Doug from San Diego sent us some samples.
And that's another thing that he helped us with. It's, you know, the facility's FDA certified.
Yep.
Tons of testing back to like, oh, this is a consumable product. Like, one, we just, you know, if we're going to put our name behind it, we want it to be good.
You can go out of business real quick with the wrong stuff in there.
Exactly. So he helped us with basically sourcing the ingredients.
Taste testing,
mixing it together, packaging. They gave us a connection for the physical packaging.
Too.
A company, I think they're somewhere in the Midwest.
That they use or they know work
well
with?
Well used, yeah. So that all happened. And then, we basically... So while this was going on, building out the product, this is when basically phase 5, we launched pre-orders. And the goal of this was to raise enough money from the pre-orders to fund the initial order from the factory. And we were able to do that. So that was another like...
So let's just go back how you did that. Did you use the email list that you had and marketed only to that? Or did you also do more paid ads?
Yeah, we just used the list that we built, friends and family, and then our surf school kind of customer base. So those are the three things we tapped into. And keep in mind the whole time when you have your list, you do not want that to go cold. Because if you do, then like you kind of wasted a bunch of money, or you have to like re-engage them.
Remind them how they got on the list because they're mad at you because they can't remember.
Yeah. And people are just so busy. They see like, you know, there's just so many things going on in this world. So to be top of mind, it's super important. So we would do like weekly emails to the list for months, keeping people engaged. And
about like what you were doing, how it was going. Was it an article on health? What was it?
Yeah, basically all of the above. So we'd build out like monthly email content calendar, and it would be in the early days, they were just nurture emails. So information about us, the product, the ingredients, et cetera, et cetera. And then as we built up towards the pre-launch, we kind of built hype on that, 30 days out, 15 days out, and then built some offers and bundles for the list and good offer for people to take advantage if they did want to like try this product early. So we didn't do Kickstarter or Indiegogo. We just went directly on our website through Shopify, kind of built like basically a landing page with a buy button. And then, through there, we were able to raise enough money to help us fund the first order. And at that point, we're like, okay, now we've kind of like done it right, so to speak, where like we haven't put any of our own money into this. Maybe, I guess we did put, you know, money in the renderings and the initial ads. But as far as funding the product, that was through customers who wanted to try it out. So it just puts you in a position to start business, a physical product business. Yeah, you're just reducing your risk exponentially because now you already have customers before you even have the product, which is huge. And then you can go, as I said, place that MOQ order. So yeah, that's exactly what we
do. And you have one SKU, one flavor.
Correct.
That's it. What is the flavor?
The flavor, like I said, it's kind of like a lemony oolong tea flavor.
Got you. Well, for somebody who doesn't know what oolong tea is, what would, is there like,
is it like black tea or is it like a green?
It's not green tea.
It's not green tea. It's not black tea. Kind of like orange tea.
That's okay.
Oolong tea is like kind of an orange tea. So it's orange, orangey lemon-ish flavor. Depends how you prepare. You can prepare it iced or hot.
Oh.
It's an instant powderized tea. It's not loose leaf. So it's like real grab and go. And if you do it, make it, you know, like a hot tea, it's a little more, I don't want to say cidery, but it takes a little more on that end versus if it's ice, which I personally like. It's something, you know, ice drink, refreshing. And then, you know, it kind of wakes me up in the afternoon, nice little cold drink. So yeah, the flavor adjusts. And it's been really interesting to see, because the one thing we were worried about when building out the flavor was, is it too sweet? Is it sweet enough, or is it not sweet enough? And we were like, well, you can always make it sweeter. People can add honey.
Sure.
So, and what we've learned is through sending the product out, and we would, same thing, we'd call all the customers, ask them how they liked it. You know, did it meet expectations? Is it what you thought it would be, et cetera, et cetera. And honestly, it's really interesting to hear people's flavor profiles. Like, it's like all over the place. Some people are like, oh, it's not sweet enough. I put honey in it. Other people are like, oh, like there's some people where it's too sweet. And other people are like, oh, it's perfect. So it's interesting. That's, I would say, one maybe downside of like an ingestible supplement product is people's taste buds. It's like, it's, as long as you can get that 80% and there's like the 10 on 10, kind of like with the apparel, like you just can't please everyone. But yeah, that's what we did.
So five phases. First phase is define your avatar, get an actual person's name and then their attributes. Then you're going to do the research of other brands that profile that you came up with uses and see what they're doing. It doesn't have to be in your product category. It can be anything across what they, it could be a TV shows they watch, blah, blah, blah.
Correct.
Number three is you're going to, what is number three? You're going to build a landing page?
Yeah. So build out basically the tech, you know,
the landing page, very simple landing page.
Yeah. And then the email autoresponder. So when they put their email in, that triggers
a sequence
and the photorealistic 3D rendering images.
So you stand that thing up. Number four is you start running ads to that thing.
Correct.
And then you call those people or get in touch with those people to do customer interviews. And then number five is you actually, if you make it past four.
Yeah. So four is definitely like a pivotal moment where you like all the work you did in phase one and two and three comes to see if you're right, basically. And if not, that's fine. Like you can just pivot.
Well, you saved yourself a lot of money because exactly. You're also going to run the financials in four to figure out if you can, when you talk to the people and you start moving into five, which is trying to make the product to deliver, you're going to figure out if you can make money or not. And if you can't make money.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. So
well, I got a question on that.
Go for it.
Because I, through my career, I've always been 50-50 on this. So if you've, this is a great five steps. The challenge is you could get to number five and realize that the financials don't work. Mm. So do you try to do the financials first to say, if it works, how much does it cost to make? Because you could save yourself time. What do you think about, like, what's the balance there?
So basically doing financials first before, like...
Yeah, before we do the phases, you sort of have to, like, cheat your way into the... The fact is, you and Peter sat down, you had a vision of the product. Mm-hmm. It was a tea product that wasn't black tea, that wasn't soda, that was some sort of superfood. So do you, at that juncture, right there, go and say... Let me find a manufacturer and find out how much going to cost to see how much margin is in this thing.
Yeah, that is a really good question. I mean, my gut says to do that first.
Well, I know what, I mean, my gut says that too, and I tend to do that. The question is, do you get to a different place in four and five? You could wind up at a different product. You might not have come up with this instant tea. You might have come up with a leaf tea that came in a bag.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I see what you're saying, because you like learned something in the product.
Well, you got lucky. I mean, I don't say lucky. I mean, you did your research, but it doesn't always go that smoothly.
Correct. Yeah. I would say like either our intuitions are good or there's a little bit of luck or a little bit of both, but 100%. Yeah. Like it's not necessarily going to be like, oh, we have this idea and like, it just like fits like that. And then the data from the Facebook ads and the landing page signs up matches that. Yeah. I think you could go both ways. I mean, it wouldn't hurt to like do the financials first and get a rough estimate. And even just looking at like, I think what we did is without even reaching out to a factory is we just looked at like bulk costs of each ingredient and just had it like, it was super rough, but we did see that the margins were pretty good. And we looked at some of the competitors in the industry or like sub competitors that were like maybe Target in the morning and then kind of looked at their price points and looked at some of the ingredients and it kind of was like, okay, if they're doing it, there's clearly the math works. So yeah, that is a good question. I don't know. 100%. I mean, I see both sides where like you could start it off, but then you change it, or like, I see both sides to it.
I mean, I will say in the supplement business, your gut is that there's enough margin in that, but you know, your gut is always optimistic. So you know, you could be optimistic and wind up that oolong tea is some super rare thing. I'm making this up that costs more than you thought because it's not a normal, it's an expensive element of your product. So I don't know. I think in today's world, I like to at least do a rough estimate, which it sounds like you and Peter did to basically say, but I do warn, like, don't look at other people and say just because they're doing it means it's working. Yeah. There's a lot of products out there that make barely any margin that you'll hear people on the internet, especially in e-commerce, are like, oh, well, I'm doing $5 million. I think that's awesome. How much is your profit?
Yeah.
Because I really don't, I'd rather do $1 million and make $300,000 and do $5 million like and make $100,000.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That seems like a lot of work for less money.
Yeah, that is a really good point.
So I think you just have to balance that process. It worked for you. But the other thing, I guess, with this process is that you guys would have gone through that faster. You running, which we mentioned earlier, you and your brother run a major business on top of this.
Yeah.
Had you not done that, Thomas, you might have been able to pull that off in a month or two.
We were super busy. We were like, we grew our team exponentially. We put like way more systems in place, built a bunch of SOPs.
But you tripled your business or doubled your business. Like you were growing. Tommy Tsunami was growing while you're trying to do this.
Yeah. Last year was a big year for us just from like a kind of system standpoint and just basically pulling ourselves out from the day-to-day operations and putting software or people or both and to keep it running. So if we're not there, the business still runs. So that's what we spend a lot of time
on top of. This is my point.
Correct.
So you could do this in 12 weeks.
Yeah. Hence why it took 8 months, 9 months,
but which is still not terribly long.
Yeah.
In the realm of life to get to a product that's sitting here in the studio right now that you're selling, right?
Yeah. That is very true. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it'd be interesting to hear if there's any statistics around, oh, if you want to create a product, this is the amount of time it takes. But I feel like I always hear like, oh, it took us 12 months or 8 months or 14 months.
Well, it's so hard to get that data. And I've looked at the data because unless you're in controlled study, like how long does it take? When you were down there, you won that business plan award when you were in school in Santa Barbara, take 8 weeks because all you're doing is going to school, doing your business.
Yeah. A lot of variables too.
I do encourage people though to do it as fast as you can.
Yeah.
Right? Because the faster you do it, the more you get to a decision and the more you know, and then you can make a no-go. Mm-hmm. And time is really the most valuable thing.
Yeah. I mean, to put like some numbers too, like phase one, I mean, that shouldn't take more than a week. Like you could do that in like 3 days, 2 days.
You should be able to. Yeah.
Yeah. Phase two, that's like another couple days a week.
That takes some time to do the research, but you can do it.
And then phase three, I mean, if you don't have any experience building that stuff out and then you want to like do it yourself, that might take a little longer. But if you like hired someone to build that out, probably a week from start to finish. Same with phase four. So I did like have experience building landing pages, running Facebook ads, creating ads, setting up like the Facebook pixel.
That can take time.
All this stuff, building out the Klaviyo email flows or Klaviyo email flows through Venture and Tommy Tsunami. So that is like one caveat. But yeah, I mean, just looking at the list, I don't know. I feel like you could do it in like four to eight weeks, you know, if you were like tapped in and super focused.
Yeah, if you're going to charge at it and try to do it. I think the faster you can kill it, the faster you can. It's sort of like venture. The guy who taught me how to do venture capital investing, he's like, you're not looking for the reason. While you are looking for the reason to invest, you're looking for the reason not to invest. Mm. So you're basically just want to try to kill your idea as fast as possible.
Yeah.
If you can try to kill it and it survives, the problem is that a lot of people don't want to kill it because they feel like they're going to fail if that happens. And that's not really true.
Yeah, I would agree with this. The process is definitely like very unemotional. It's kind of just like, it is what it is. You know, the customers or your email list is going to tell you like what the answer is. It doesn't matter like what you think. So
how are things going now at Midday?
Good. We're averaging around $1,000 a month in sales. So still super early days. What we're doing now is building out two things, building out tons of new creative. So a bunch of video ads for two of our main angles, which is like the afternoon slump and then the soda afternoon alternative. We've seen some traction with that. So, you know, like 20 to 30 video ads per kind of like hook to test, which just takes time. And then calling all the customers that ordered. So what we do when someone orders, especially because, you know, 90% of the orders are from, we don't know the people. We did have an article come out from the Half and Bay magazine, which got a little buzz locally, but normally the customers are from out of the state. So I always call them, hey, this is, you know, my name, Thomas, co-founder of Midday. Just like want to thank you for your order. That always like, you know, really stokes them out just because like how many of you, I don't think I've ever.
Nobody calls anybody. Nobody,
yeah, especially if it's someone from online. So I'll do that and I'll, oh, you know, let me know what you think. Then I'll re-reach out a couple weeks later and then kind of go through the like interview process that we did in phase four, but a little different.
Do you log those in Google Docs or something?
Yeah, I have a spreadsheet that customer's name and then I have three questions. Like it's called like an NPS score, you know, 1 through 10 and things of like,
Just for people who are listening, that would be an NPS score is the question is, would you recommend this product to a friend or to a friend?
Yeah,
and it's on 1 to 10, basically.
Correct. And then what else do I ask? One thing I've been liking to ask is like, how would you describe this? If someone asks, like, oh, what is that? Hearing them tell me how to describe it helps us with new hooks for creative, for Facebook ads, or new things to like kind of like hone in on or just message. So that's actually another point too. Even though we like, you know, it's not like you do phase 1 through 5 and then you launch a product. Cool. I'm like never going to do that again. It's kind of a continuous process of like learning more about your customer, refining your messaging, and then creating better ads, better landing pages, and just kind of like reiterating that process. So yeah, those are the two things we're doing right now is customer interviews. And then we're just doing a huge creative overhaul to like launch a bunch of new ads.
And is this going to be now a 12-month push to try to see, do you have a goal and say, if we can't get, or we're going to try to do 50,000 in revenue, or
yeah.
Do you have like a threshold that says, hey, if we can't get it past this,
I think if we can like, the first goal is to acquire customers at break even. And then the second goal is to acquire customers profitably. And that kind of like, as we're learning about basically how much, what our reorder rate is and that percent. It's still a little too early to say, but I think for year one goal would be $100,000 in top line sales. That's our year one goal. So we'll see. It's still, Facebook's funny where it's like you can go from spending like $1,000 a month to like $20,000 a month. You can just scale it up real quick when you do have like a winning ad, but you just need to test like so much creative until you find something that like kind of hits and then the numbers work too. So we're just kind of going through that process right now.
Are you running the ads?
Yeah. Yeah, create all the ads and then, yeah, I'll manage it. But these days it's tricky. It's funny you're talking about cookies because like different days on Facebook now where it's just harder to be a marketer basically, which is maybe good for the consumer. But
why is that?
Just because the attribution isn't as accurate and the pixel isn't as accurate due to, well, like updates on websites where...
Well, the pixel is not accurate at all because you and I were talking about it. We had Rich Stone, who's from Half Moon Bay, and I think he's a company's Tech Target. And we were talking about how basically now Chrome is doing away with third-party cookies by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So they've already started rolling it out. Safari, which is about 30% of the market, has already killed it, killed third-party cookies. Firefox, which is a very smaller proportion of the market, has killed them. By the end of the year, there'll be no third-party cookies. That pixel for Facebook will only be as good as the walled garden that Facebook owns, which is Facebook, Instagram. WhatsApp doesn't have ads. I don't think so. You're not going to get that. So you're basically going to get Instagram and Facebook. And within that ecosystem, they're going to be able, that's why they make you log in. Because as soon as you log in, they know everything about you. But that pixel and that cookie that follows, used to follow all these people around the internet, is now done.
Yeah. So that's why.
That was just for listeners, not you. I know you know that. But for listeners 100%. Who don't know that.
And that's why too, like basically video, short form video ads is the punchline to your best case to succeed on paid traffic and Facebook. Because since you don't have that data, you need to basically put a video out there and then Facebook can find those people within Facebook's ecosystem.
Yep.
And then once they're pixeled on Facebook, then you can retarget them on Facebook with, you know, a static image ad or, you know, a follow-up. And then I've heard that it takes 7 interactions with a brand before a customer will place an order on average. So if you can get all those touch points within the Facebook ecosystem, and then the reason you use the video ad is there's every second, you know, or scroll like second, whether they watch the whole video, that is sending data to Facebook. And then if a person with this age and these interests watch it longest, it'll show it to more people like that. So it kind of like helps, kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, basically, within the Facebook ecosystem. Like you said, it's getting a little stricter on the rest of the web.
Oh, it's almost going to be impossible, except for Google, because if you're in Google and you log into your... As soon as you log in to a walled garden, let's call it, they know everything about you. They're not, it's not even a cookie at that point. It's Brandon's account and Brandon looked at all these things.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. And back when I ran my phishing website, that's exactly what we do and how we had such specific information. Do you think that, have you tried any YouTube ads? Because YouTube video ads seem to be the next place, not the next place, but a good place.
We have not. We're basically just like focused on one channel, kind of like one SKU, one channel. Let's master one channel and then like think about doing other channels. And kind of Facebook is that lowest hanging fruit. They have like the best algorithm compared to like Snapchat or TikTok. And when I say Facebook, that like includes Instagram too,
because
they own both each other for everyone listening. But yeah, we're just laser focused on one channel to kind of like crack that successfully and then branch out from there.
Any plans to go into stores?
No. Yeah. I mean, maybe long-term, but like for the, I don't know, going back to just staying really focused, because that's like a whole nother business model, a whole nother beast.
Did you do that with Venture? I forget.
Kinda. I was kind of all over the place. So now we're just a lot more focused on like Q1, Q2, and just 2024 goals are, and then reverse engineers for the next steps to make that happen. So this is kind of like something I learned through that previous process was, as an entrepreneur, you have all these ideas and there's like so many ways to build a business. And there's a lot of things you hear on the internet of like what to do. And sometimes that can almost be more destructive than helpful. So we're just super focused on, online, specifically one channel via Facebook. And then, you know, as things grow, there's like a time to scale into maybe other channels and hit new audiences. But these days, I mean, you can build a business. It's been done over and over and over again on strictly Facebook ads from like 0 to 1 million. Like it's been done so many times. I'm not saying it's easy, but a lot of direct consumer businesses have done it. So it's not like you need all these different channels. And I know specifically with Google, like we just don't have the budget to compete with like Starbucks, Pete's Coffee, Mudwater is like a kind of a sub competitor that's, they're like a huge, I think 8, maybe even 9-figure business. So it's just a different game. So you just got to kind of recognize where we are now and stay focused on that.
I think that's really important. I think, you know, congratulations on the success. It's very hard to get from.
Business is hard.
Yeah, right?
For sure. Business is difficult.
So winding up here, three tips that you would give listeners who are listening, have an idea. We went through the five-step process that you implemented, which is really a lean product design, sort of get, validate before you even have it, and then figure it out and ship it, which I think you and I agree you could do over 12 weeks if you really jumped into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you could do more if you were full-time and like somehow have the luxury of not having to have a job. You could probably do it faster. But what three tips would you leave listeners with who are out there? They have the idea swirling around in their head and they want to take the next step, but don't know what to do. Yeah. What would be your advice? Three tips.
I would say number one is understand that it's expected to be punched in the stomach as a business owner. So like when that happens, don't be like, oh my God, like I can't believe this happened to me. Like, no, like, oh, like this is expected. So I think just that mindset shift, it makes it, yeah, just like going into it, like this is going to suck. And it's like pushing a boulder up a hill. So just knowing that and like being up for that challenge. And so I would say that's one. Two, I would say like move as far as your thoughts and not even thoughts of like what your vision is. Have that. There's a balance between like having that be your North Star, but also having the ability to like be flexible with it and be like water and kind of move it. Because at the end of the day, the market is going to tell you what matters, and doesn't matter what your opinion is or your theory. At the end of the day, like the market is the market, and you just have to like, that is the reality. So I guess what the tip or something I think about a lot is the balance between having that North Star of like this grand vision of whatever my goal is, whether it's, you know, create a product, sell a service, you know, build business to XYZ or, you know, a lifestyle or whatever it may be. But then individual steps, yeah, just being flexible of how you maybe get there. Cause you know, if you're too rigid, it's just not necessary. And then last thing I think about a lot that I've been trying to practice is basically aggressive patience. So going back to that North Star is like, okay, this vision might take 5, 10, 20 years, but so I'm patient with that and I'm enjoying the process, but in the day to day, I'm like very aggressive and like executing on all the things I need to do. So kind of the balance between those two emotions or things that go through, if you can kind of harness that and have the ability to have, you know, the long-term vision, be patient with that and enjoy the process, but in the day to day, really aggressive and actionable. I think those are a couple of things that could help.
I think those are some good tips, Thomas. Where's the best place for listeners to find Midday if they're looking for a midday pickup or a supplement to their soda addiction?
Yeah, right. You can visit us at Midday Superfoods. That's MIDDAY superfoods.com. You can find us on Google as well. We'll pop up.
Right on. We already put that in the show notes for you listeners that want to check it out and order some today. Thomas, thanks for coming in, man. It's been fun.
Appreciate you.
Congratulations on your success.
Of course, man. Many, many more.
Right on. Bye, everyone.